Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast, the premier podcast for all the best insider info on the music business. I'm your host, Roman Perry. This week, we have Henry Liu, one of the creators of Space Yacht, a weekly club night featuring some of the heaviest bass music you've ever heard, and delicious, delicious pizza. On this episode, we discuss how it all began as a few friends trying to create something cool, why it's important to not be scared of asking for outside help, and how pizza has become such an important part of their brand.
Industry Talks.
So, welcome to the Industry Talks podcast. Henry, how's it going?
Thanks for having me, Roman. I'm hanging. Today's a brilliant day in Southern California.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty nice day out. So, you help promote and run and organize and are the face of a pretty awesome night here in Los Angeles called Space Yacht.
Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah. Of course I can tell you something about it. Well, Space Yacht's my baby. It's a brainchild between me and a couple partners. Their names are Rami and Ollie. It's an event in LA that's been happening every Tuesday for almost 3 years now.
Not even like holiday breaks?
We did holiday breaks on the first year, but after that we just kept going. We didn't even skip Christmas. Actually, this is the year where it's going to be on Christmas Day.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'll think about it, you know. I wonder if it's doable to create something that's like Christmas Day Tuesday party. So our thing is, you know, we've been at it every single Tuesday. You know, let's just say 95% of Tuesdays for the past almost three years now. We're about to turn
at least 50 Tuesdays a year, probably.
Yeah, you're spot on. And you know, this is just before the other pop-ups too, and we do a bunch of shows in LA outside of Tuesdays, but our whole rep is Tuesdays, a little underground party. You know, we like to use the word rave, but it's, you know, it's a fun kind of community LA-based thing for electronic music. And we came together, you know, almost 3 years ago to, you know, promote house music, because that's what brought me and my partners together. We worked long hours, and when everyone left the office, we would just start bumping house music, and it was dirty. It was just like, yo, we should party and we should do this kind of thing as our sound.
So like your project.
Yeah. And that eventually blossomed. It brought a lot of people from, you know, the music industry, and, you know, fans started catching on when we started booking certain people. And, you know, even the music booking started growing into different genres like bass music and dubstep and trap. So it kind of, you know, the version as it exists today is, you know, it's a very natural evolution of what we started, which was how do we promote and push the kind of music that we like?
Yeah.
You know, that's always been the energy of what we've been doing.
Cool. So where did you guys all work together when you first started?
Yeah.
Or like, how'd you guys meet? Like, what was like the genesis of you guys coming together?
Yeah, I could give you a story about that. Me, Rami, and Ollie met around, like, I'd say like 2013, a couple of years before we started Space Yacht. We all worked at this kind of like music marketing agency. And we had done some work for like Steve Aoki, Chainsmokers, huge, like big clients.
Right.
So we started speaking the language of like social media. At the time, like Vine was like a huge resource for like comedy.
This is like ancient history.
You would spend hours on Vine. You know, that was just, you know, ancient history. Yeah. That was just like what it was like in 2013 and 14.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we started speaking this sort of language of figuring out how to use music or use technology to push music and combine it with, you know, multimedia ways to like, you know, push this message. You know, obviously we didn't replicate it, you know, dollar per, you know, like point per point when we did Space Yacht, but it was like, you know, how do you make do with, you know, Twitter when it comes to putting a show out?
Right.
You know, it trained us to kind of have like a different, flavor when we came out with our stuff on the Space Yacht side.
Like, what lessons can you apply to?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that's sort of it. And prior to that, I had known So there's two partners. There's three partners in Space Yacht. There's Rami, who's sort of like our resident DJ, and then there's Ollie, who's, you know, our partner in like creating the visual side of things. And there's myself, you know, sort of the music direction and kind of the operational stuff. So right. I'll do the actual kind of like, you know, I sort of own the world of like the show aspect.
Okay.
And then, you know, we all share like this online visual creative aspect. And then there's like, you know, one of like, I play MC duties too. And then Rami, obviously he DJs. So he right. performs at the parties and I'll like come up and do a little, like some mic stuff. I'll order the pizza, you know? Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
I should talk about pizza.
Yeah. We'll get to the pizza.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait for you.
Yeah.
So Ollie, next. I met in college.
Yeah.
And I've known him now probably 7 or 8 years. And we got our start booking like the, you know, like every university has their like big annual
party
music bash
yeah.
or party or whatever, right? And I got my start pushing towards dance music. So I was like, it was like a multi-stage thing at the big soccer stadium at UC San Diego. And I was like part of the crew that's started like, oh yeah, let's do this like dance music thing. The yeah. word EDM didn't exist. It was just like, I think people just called it dance music.
It was music.
Like, it was mostly like Mastercraft and like Justice and like the
Crookers.
Like, yeah, it was we were barely coming out of like the dance rock era,
right.
And then people were starting to DJ on CDJs, and everyone was sort of like confused whether or not even to call these people musicians at the time. And it was right. just a crazy time for electronic music. It was weird. People were getting used to it.
What year was this about? Like 2009, 10?
2009.
Okay.
You know, at that time, my stage at college was, it was like Z-Trip and No Such Thing and like Designer Drugs. So, you know, Blog House. It was like a combination of like Blog House and...
Like LA,
you
know, beat scene stuff.
LA beat scene, definitely.
Yeah.
And then also like open format DJs figuring out that the next generation of electronic music included a level of like actually making your own music.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like not quite sure what I mean,
yeah.
There was a long time where DJs spun music that was off the radio. So that's
right.
called a top 40 DJ, an open format DJ. Where you play the hits and like everyone's really happy and, you know, you still have a great time.
Yeah. Like, and DJ then, AM was like
exactly,
the open format, you know, DJ.
Nothing wrong with this. This
yeah.
was an incredible era of music
yeah.
and like creativity. You know, moving forward, it's also that, like playing other people's records, but also including a layer of production, which means you started making your own, making, i.e. producing your own music. You know, let's give an example like Skrillex, you know,
yeah.
he came on to the scene and not only did he play other people's music, he played his own music. So, you know, I just think over time people are getting more creative and people are putting more energy into their work. And, you know, I think it's great. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you got to the point from, I mean, 10 years ago, you know, maybe you'd have like a Tiesto or something who releases tracks and then he'll DJ and play them out. But now, I mean, I think you've kind of transitioned from, now it's like people are playing sets that are all their own shit.
Yeah, like, yeah. And granted, like, I'm giving my own interpretation
right,
of this. Like,
right.
these things have existed forever. You
Definitely.
Know, like, you've played other people's records probably forever, you
right.
know, even way before our time. But, you know, this is my perspective coming up.
And everybody really, has their own thread
yeah.
through
yeah.
the EDM wave. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, and we really came up without any kind of, like, you know... We weren't really working for someone who threw parties.
Right.
You know? So we had zero training, I guess, from, you know, the quote unquote OGs of the scene. And
yeah.
we had zero kind of predispositions about how to do things and how to run things. So we really kind of just kind of like finangled it our own way.
We kind of figured it out. What you just like went in, I don't know, almost like virgins. Like you just had no idea what you were doing
yeah.
and you figured out your own way and you found your own voice.
Right, right.
You know?
And granted, yes, you know, we did do some bookings in college, or I did. And, you know, the thing I gained from that is, okay, I'm starting to understand how to try to get ahead of the scene. And
right.
I started to understand how to, like, you know, on the business side, it's like, okay, now I knew how to speak the language and read the contracts, yada, yada, yada. I mean, those things were incredibly important, but to have a weekly party of our own and kind of do it ourselves was like, it truly was a DIY kind of thing.
Yeah. So how did you meet Rami?
So Rami.
Rami, okay. How did you meet Rami?
I met him and so did, so me and Ollie, okay, this is college. And then we both ended up working at the same creative agency as Rami. And you know, we did different things. Like, you know, Rami was like a pitcher for like the music sales side. And then, Ollie did some of the YouTube creative. And then I did some of like the research and the marketing. And it was just like, okay, yeah, we were all doing different things late into the night. And somehow we realized, hey, we all like house music, you know?
Yeah.
And we just kind of connected that way. And after a while I was like, okay, what can we do? You know, how can we add to our extracurricular, you know, resume, I guess. So we started throwing this thing called Space Yacht, which
Where did the name come from?
The name itself was like a joke between me and Ollie in college. It was just like the absurdity of our, you know, endeavors one day.
Right.
You know, it was just like this vehicle for like absurdity. You know, like we used to say that, you know, by the time we do something crazy with our lives, the world will be, you know, everyone will be driving around in space yachts. They won't be in like cars anymore. It's just like us looking into the future. So, I mean, overall, it's just like we're just this nonsensical, like not super serious about ourselves.
Right.
Sort of ragtag crew. But, you know, there was a time where we weren't even sure we were going to do more than like one or two parties. We just wanted to like do it one. Just to do it.
Like as in like more than one event, like have it be a regular thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no kind of going into it, seeing that, like saying that we'll do this even once a month. We were just like, oh, let's just throw a party because we want to throw a party.
Yeah.
And we did. And it was like, you know, pretty awesome.
For like that first few, were they like, did you do it on a Tuesday and then were you like, we're gonna do it next week again, or like when did it become a regular thing?
Let's start from the beginning of the first incarnation of Space Yacht. The very first one was a warehouse party in like the middle of nowhere. I mean, well, it was in downtown LA.
Okay.
But it was like middle of nowhere in the sense that it wasn't a music venue. It was just literally a warehouse that we went in. We kind of built the soundstage. We built the lighting. We got this amazing kind of glow in the dark painting.
Okay.
Which like wrapped around two of the walls. So you were really immersed in this art. So that was the first incarnation of Space Yacht. And we did it to celebrate our partner Ollie's birthday party. And then we were just like quiet for a while, like busy with work, doing other things in life.
Yeah.
And then we ran into this venue owner that ran a place called Golden Box, which is, you know, right now at this moment, we're in the heart of Hollywood and it happens to be right off Hollywood Boulevard. And it was like this, the only venue that you ever had to like, you know, when we say Hollywood, it's not Hollywood at all. You had to go through the parking lot into an alley. I mean, you remember this.
You had to go around the back.
You walked past this nasty dumpster, and then you go down this corridor, and then that's how you get to the venue. And it was like this kind of like secret, almost just imagine like the millennial speakeasy.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's like that. You know,
it's like people a back
leather jackets.
It's a backdoor party, and it was felt very cool.
And it wasn't Hollywood at all in the sense that, you know, there were sparkling lights or anything. It was pretty stripped down. And, you know, that way it was really about who we invited to be there. And it, you know, there's no way you would have just stumbled upon this. So literally every person in that room and in that venue was someone we personally invited or was invited by like a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
So that kind of created this really cool community vibe where everyone more or less trusted each other, and it was pretty drama free and very non Hollywood. And really like the word spread from there, and also, you know, the things we did on social media to also, you know, embrace and amplify what was going on. And after a while, like I have no idea. Like, people started, you know, going back to Skrillex. I don't, like, he showed up, and then, you know, some Korean pop star showed up, and it was like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea how you guys found out about this.
It was probably the pizza.
You know what? Maybe it was. Maybe it was.
Can we talk about the pizza for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys are pretty known for that, is like, introduce, like, you just bring out pizza around midnight, right? What time is it at?
Yeah.
You normally bring it out?
Like right around midnight, 1 a.m. or towards the end of the night, we'll have a little pizza. And for someone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Space Yacht is known for our kind of like pizza deliveries.
Yeah.
And I, by no means do we claim to have invented pizza.
You're not the pizza party necessarily.
Or like, do we have a, you know, let's say like a copyright on pizza, but you know, that's sort of our tradition. I'll say that much. And you know, let me give you the story of how this came to be. So even before Space Yacht, I had this character on Twitter that called the Pizza Man, and I would just tweet about random things in life, but in the context of pizza. So I would always find a way to like
tie it back
to pizza, whether it be it by like topping or cheesiness or the greasiness or like analogies towards thin or thick crust. So that, I mean, that was just like my way of being on social media. I had this character and on top of like my own personal Twitter.
Right.
So, you know, this was way before Space Yacht. I'd say like another, like half a year to even a whole year before Space Yacht. And when it came time, there was like night number two at our new venue. There was like a backup or a sewage thing that happened next door to which shared a wall. So the club next door we couldn't get in. Like, you couldn't go into the other club to fix it. And it was a Tuesday night, so nothing was happening there. So we called the owner, and he was like, oh, yeah, I don't have anyone out there because it's like no one does anything on a Tuesday.
Right.
You know? So we just had our venue. But, you know, to our dismay, I guess, it shared a wall with this place, and like some of the smell kind of like
it's coming kinda through,
like seeped over.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I could do. And I was just like, okay, I guess we're screwed. And so everyone who was in the venue, our venue, was just obviously displeased. And so they all went to the patio to, you know, smoke, do their thing, be a hipster, or like, i.e. like just breathe, you know?
Yeah.
And the one of the first instincts I had to save the party was to order pizza. In my head, you know, this is how it worked out. I was like, okay, just order pizza. The smell will overcome anything that, you know, could be happening inside, and everyone's going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, it worked out not exactly like that, but to an extent, it did help.
Right. Took everybody's mind off of it a little bit.
Right, right. So yeah. I sort of ordered, you know, a few pizzas, and I paraded it around the venue, and I just kind of said that, look, if you want a slice, you're more than welcome to grab one, and you should, but you have to do it on the dance floor, like where, you know, where the energy should be.
Right.
And you know what? It worked. It worked. It brought a lot of people back in. And I think the DJ was happy. It was about to be a pretty cruddy performance, 'cause no one, you know, everyone was sort of outside. So, you know, looking back, you know, we haven't stopped doing it since, and we've always thought about it, and from time to time, but it was like, you know what, this is part of our tradition now. And we realized, like, looking back, it was really a reward for sticking around. So,
right.
So for someone who may have just gone right when doors opened and stayed till the very end of the night, this pizza is for you. It's not for anybody else.
Right.
It's for the people who kind of like danced their faces off, stuck around, you know, wasn't being a bougie, you know, kind of guy at like hanging around in the patio or away from the other people. It was always about rewarding the people who, you know, showed their energy by staying around all night. So
yeah.
We haven't stopped doing it since. And it's now, I guess, part of our identity. It's funny because like we'll be online and we'll get these like screenshots about like, oh my God, this party's doing pizza. And it's like, and my response usually is like, dude, I didn't invent pizza. You know, pizza's been around for like, you know, centuries. But you know, it's just part of our language, and you know, if you want it to be part of your language, then so be it. But you know, people do recognize that it's sort of, our thing, I guess now, but, I'm not mad. I love that. You know, it's something we did out of, you know, appreciation for the people who stayed at our parties. So I don't mind that people recognize that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just part of, I think it's just what you guys do.
We're the Chuck E. Cheese of dance music.
That's fine. I mean, that's not a bad brand to have. Yeah. A lot of people know about Chuck E. Cheese.
The adult Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, that's great. So you guys started at Golden Box, and you said the pizza was your second time at Golden Box?
Yeah, well, I don't know if second, it was pretty early on, like in show the number two few. Or three. Yeah.
Okay. And then you were at Golden Box for a while.
For about a year.
Okay. I remember I went a lot back then. That was when I first moved to LA.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I heard about Space Yacht from one of my friends. He was like, oh, you got to come through. And I checked it out. And I was like, I was there a lot.
That's a thing. Like, I hear that people who move to LA and, you know, if they have like that one or two friends that, you know about dance music, usually this is like the recommendation for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which, well, I'm stoked about.
It's good to go. I mean, I don't really have the energy to go out on Tuesdays that much anymore. Not that it was that long ago, but anyway, it's good to go for, I thought it was great to go because it was an opportunity for me to meet people. It was an opportunity for me to see people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It became almost like the watering hole.
Yep.
In a way.
Yep. It is for a lot of people.
And it's great. And so then eventually you guys moved on to Genesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you also did a few at, what was the library one? Was that underneath?
That was like downstairs from Genesis. It was called Hemingway's.
Okay.
And then called The Study.
The Study, right.
And that place was like, their decor was just having all, just every books. Single wall lined with books, which was really great. But yeah, we spent like a year in that kind of building.
Yeah.
So it was either the upstairs lounge or like the venue behind the lounge. We did a couple of shows there, and then downstairs in the study, AKA the library, where, you know, we probably did a month there.
Yeah.
But we had like a relationship with that sort of building.
Yeah.
And then after a while, you know, I think we started outgrowing it because there was a time where people waited like up to an hour and a half to get in.
Right.
And, you know, on one perspective, it's like, yeah, that's awesome. That's really great.
Got a line around the door. That.
But the other thing is, you know, as someone who throws these parties, it's like, I do want people to get in.
Right.
Like, I want everyone to be able to find a place to enjoy themselves and not wait all night. So, you know, after that, at the beginning of this year, we moved to Sound. You know, I think we'll be there for maybe, you know, at least this year and the next year, you know, and that venue is like, it's a world renowned spot for like house and techno, in to the point where like any European, you know, house or touring, I say European, like someone not from here.
Right.
If they come to LA and like anyone not from LA
who
wants to come to LA and play like a renowned techno spot, this is probably one of the first places they think of.
Sound.
You know, other than like maybe like a warehouse or something. Right. So this would be one of the few places. So they invited us to, you know, be the face of like genre spanning, like bass music, trap music, and, you know, some EDM in there.
Right.
But you know, we're like the only recurring weekly night there, which that has that kind of music. And then you have your other, it's a monthly party. It's called Night Bass, which is also very incredible. You know, we're the only like outside parties that, come into Sound. So I think they're pretty picky about what they do, and we appreciate that.
Like, it took a while. I think you couldn't have just started there. Mm-mm. Like, you kind of had to build your own community first, and then
I think Night Bass started here. And you, if you like listeners that you know here coming tuning in for the first time, I'd suggest you look them up. They have their like specific kind of house and garage sound. I think they actually started here. So I wouldn't say it's like a hard and fast rule, but there's, I think the judgment kind of like criteria for the sound staff are like, you know, maybe they're looking for like sort of something that matches with their world renown. Cause I think the seriousness of which they do their business is like a top priority for them.
Definitely.
So we've tried to like embrace and respect that when we did our things here.
So when you switched from, when you went into Sound, you actually started having you went from being a free RSVP model
yeah,
to a paid, like, you know, you're selling tickets.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what the transition was like for that, because like you went from having a free party that as long as you're RSVP'd, you can show up to, and then now you have a, like, you know, it's a ticketed situation. Yeah. And like, I'm wondering like how that worked for you guys to like, you know, make the decision to do that. And then also too, how, you know, how people reacted to having that be this, you know what I mean? The people that were the regulars who were like, oh, now we have to pay tickets to go pay a ticket price.
I'll walk you through. We actually had like a long kind of internal discussion about whether or not to charge and to charge more or to charge more often or like to charge consistently.
Yeah.
It was like a really like big question mark that we couldn't really decide for a while. But we, you know, ultimately we did end up deciding to charge, but also to deliver. So, you know, it's looking back, it's actually a lot more simple than we thought. Like at the time, without the experience that we have now, it's like, oh my God, should we keep it RSVP? Are people going to be angry? But, you know, in the end, our ultimate decision was like, yeah, go ahead and charge a lot if you want, but just deliver a lot.
Right.
Like if you throw a free party, then you expect, you know, the ambiance will be people who like free parties, and that brings a certain type of people. You know, and then you could take it to the other end of the spectrum where it's like you pay a pretty penny. You know, we're not like we're somewhere in between, but like it's like, let's just walk you through the spectrum. You have the free party and you get that kind of, that's what you get, you know, and then you take your, you know, let's say you paid $60 for like a mini festival ticket or like a big club night. You know, you should be able to expect to get that kind of quality of production or that quality of DJ or that kind of ambiance that you paid for. So we were like, okay, why don't we just take a small step up? Because first of all, we think that people who play this party deserve to be paid more.
Right.
Because they're brilliant artists. Second, we'll commit to delivering a bit more. So we've now moved. In our head, it was like we've now moved to a really incredible venue that's well staffed. You know, the technology in there, the sound, the equipment is like literally state of the art stuff that, you know, we've never got at our previous venues.
There's a Disco Shark.
There's a freaking, you know, it's like a disco. It's a disco ball, but it's a shark.
Yeah,
and that is like, you know, for anyone who's listened that's gone to Coachella before, it's that one.
Yeah.
You know, it's the one hanging inside the techno stage. Oh, by the way, we wanted to work with these people because the sound, the staff at sound were also the people who created the Yuma tent at Coachella. So we were like, we're now weaving ourselves into this conversation of like people who are extremely committed to a certain, you know, community within Southern California that's like about, you know, underground electronic music.
Right.
And to be working with these people week to week, we were like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, they helped us through this. And back to your question, was like, yes, we just, it wasn't that hard looking back, like to just, you know, take a step up, charge a few bucks, but also deliver, you know, just have that, commit yourselves to bringing the most fresh stuff and to maintain a certain energy in a space where people can escape and enjoy themselves every Tuesday night. You know, and it actually, it takes some work. You know, you really, you know, as someone who, like a booker or like a talent, you know, organizer, you really, you know, for anyone listening out there that wants to like throw your own party, it's like, you really should listen to music and you really should, you know, stay on top of like, you know, supporting artists that might be coming up through a network that you might be able to influence. So, you know, certainly, you know, our bookings are like, we will have their touring DJs, people who are established, but then what about everything else? You know, are you using these kind of like time slots to support people in LA or maybe happen to be in your city? That are you using these wisely and supporting people who are, you know, down the line interested in having full on DJ careers and you know, like a touring band or something like that. You know, the opposite spectrum would be like, oh yeah, just like book anyone, you know, book a homie or, you know, i.e. like not having your due diligence. So we're definitely doing our research and trying to find the ones that deserve it the most. and combining that with like creative concepts, like touring DJs and all that, their productions, our own production, to make overall what is an interesting party.
Right. And worth the price and of admission. That's
worth. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not going to lie. It was a very hard question for a long time.
Yeah.
But now looking back, it's like, now we're so interested in like this conversation. We're at the point where like, how can we create an event that people will pay $30 for?
Right.
So our creative strategy now, like looking into next year, it's like, what else can we do? You know, we've now gotten so much experience doing this thing and working with people with higher standards that we're now thinking into the mindset of like, how do we create this amazing experience where not only the artists that you work with get paid the money that they deserve and more, but you know, everyone who goes will feel like they deserved, or that every penny was extremely well spent.
Or even feeling like they feel like they've, you know, at the end of the night, they're like, well, that was a steal for what we got.
Yeah. You should,
or
like,
a way we could have paid more.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You know, I want everyone to come out feeling that way.
Yeah.
That it was like a great deal, and that, you know, period, that's it.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Because I mean, I think to an extent, you guys are already, I think you have people feeling that way now. Because I know like you guys had, with the Mad Zoo crew come in last week, and
right.
Mad Zoe and A-Track and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was a huge deal. And that was a $10 ticket. And not many other events do that. You know what I
mean? Yeah, you're like, totally right.
You guys have the clout where you're able to book these people, and you also have, you know, the amount of people, like you have the audience that you can have these people come in, and it's just like, just the way that you're packaging it. It's like, I don't know. It's almost like, you guys have this like little secret box, you know what I mean? It's like, you have this like little secret prize box.
Yeah.
Cause like the way that you guys promote it, if you, you know, the people that don't know is that you just have question marks on all of your flyers.
Right.
So, you know, nobody knows who's playing that night or that week.
Right.
And I think that kind of offers like, you know, you're getting this like little mystery prize every single week.
That's so interesting that you put it in that. Like, I've never heard that analogy. It's like, I don't know if you guys out there are familiar with like Loot Crate.
Oh yeah.
Where you get a mystery box, and I guess you pay a subscription fee, and
yeah,
you
like
get this mystery box.
$30 or something.
$30.
There's like a bunch of different ones that do a bunch
of
different
things.
You get
like these trinkets and goodies and like stuff that you have no idea what it is. And basically Roman just drew this analogy because we never announced our lineups. And that's interesting because, you know, there was a time where we did, and we like, it was like full on standard, like a markety flyer.
Yeah.
It looked like a nightclub flyer, but we started changing it and said, you know, I think, you know, the question was like, do people trust us enough where we could just throw a party? And not worry about, you know, in the kind of like booking world, there's
right.
like a, there's a lot of time spent on dealing with agents and business people on like how to, you know, bill the artists properly and to like present them and use their marketing. And we're like, okay, well, we don't do shows big enough where we really need to go crazy on
right.
the marketing and like to get into all this advertising stuff, yada, yada, yada. You know, yes, it's very important when you're working with a huge venue or like a festival to go through this process. But
maybe
like,
when you guys are getting to the point where you're working with a huge venue or a huge festival, like maybe you just won't even have to because people will just trust you.
Yeah, maybe not. And it's not that we don't want to do it.
Right.
But, you know, like we love working with agents. Like
yeah.
It's not like a us versus them thing at all. Like, guys out there are listening to it. Like, You know, we actually still work with agents.
Yeah, like we're not drawing
kind of
lines in the sand at all.
It's
right
not
now.
Like that at
no.
all. But it's just a question of our creative internally and just asking ourselves, look, you know, you work at a venue that has X amount of people. And if you can, like, we do this every single week. So it's like, if we can, like, save ourselves a little time, but also, encourage our fan base to trust us a little bit, why don't we try it?
Yeah,
you know, and our presentation on the artist side, when we go to the agents and the artists, we present to them like, yo, like we won't put your name on the flyer. And, you know, granted, to be ahead of it, I'm sure some artists might be a little alarmed, like why won't my name be on the flyer? But it's like, we're embarking on this creative process where, you know, people read the Space Yacht email. That's the first step to you discovering the show. And it has, it's granted your name's blurred out, but then it has a couple of clues, maybe a record label or two where you might have been signed to. And as a fan, we're actually flipping the marketing narrative for you. So what does that mean? It means you are discovering everything about the artist before the show, and you're going online on SoundCloud. Like, what was that record label? Like, what time did that come out? So they're like learning a ton of things about you as an artist before they even see you in the show. So how is that flipped? Like, in a traditional flyer, it's like, you know, oh, I see the name. If I feel like it, I might log onto SoundCloud or Spotify to listen to a few pieces of music. But, you know, that's all, you know, that's more often than not all I know. You know, you just, oh, I like the music. Oh, it's cool. But your identity as an artist is like, there's no real platform for that. So
yeah.
Us as a promoter, we don't use recycled bios. Like, we don't ask artists for their bios. We do our own take. We write, we do our research, and we'll write our thing in our own, you know, kind of flavor. So like, we'll write whatever the fuck we want. I can say that right on the podcast.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, we can write whatever the fuck we want. We don't use recycled bios. We don't use your photos.
No.
We'll use what we want to use, and it's what we see about the artist or what we know. Sometimes, yeah, the artist will clue us in and say like, oh, we're about to leak this, and we'll like, you know, do a little plug for them. But we found this process is like, wow, people trust our brand specifically so much that the Space Yacht newsletter is a thing for a lot of people. Like,
yeah.
People love to read it because there's all these like Easter eggs that sometimes the artist hasn't even announced yet. So we've done a lot of like track debuts, like leaks about facts or like record label signings coming up that really, like, there's no existing place where you can promote facts like this other than the artist channel. So it's like, by us tweeting this or by us doing our newsletter, it's like, you are able to get all our eyeballs all of a sudden on your stuff.
Right.
And this is all before you even perform. You know, you have nothing to prove. You don't need to prove anything to anyone. And on top of that, you know, you as an artist, you're probably getting a lot of fans that may or may not have known about you before. They just came because they trusted us, and now you've turned what is our fan into your fan. So we've kind of like messed with the artist marketing model, I guess, and kind of just completely flattened it and rebuilt our own way. And I think, you know, a lot of people are, you know, interested in it because now you have all these factoids and like you know about the artist as an identifiable personality, as opposed to just like, oh, music, great.
Yeah.
You know, I like it. I dance to it. Great. But our argument is like, there's so much more. There's a person, there's a story, there's like these record label signings, and you're like joining different teams, working with different people, doing merch. There's no real like kind of like platform for promotion for that.
Yeah. Well, it almost seems like, I mean, you guys are like almost like presenting this like puzzle or like this riddle to the people that show up.
Yeah.
And the people that are like very interested. I remember even like when I first started going to Space Yacht, when I first moved to LA, I'd try and guess who was playing. And I like see, I get the email, I'd be like, who could this person be? And I'd be so much more invested. And it just is like, I don't know, it's like almost like a call to action or something like that.
It really is.
It kind of gives people a opportunity to, because, you know, you say if you are going to go to another club night and see that, I don't know, like say A-Track is playing or something like that, and you're a fan of him and you're going to show up, you're not going to know, like, knowing that it is A-Track, which is right in front of you, is almost like you're giving the prize away. Like, if you put his name on the flyer, it's giving the prize away. Whereas if you obscure his name and you give some details and you find out it's him, then it's like, you can tell your friends that. It's like the knowledge of who it is becomes this kind of like gem that people can unlock.
Right. So the way we do it, I guess, based off of what you just said, it's like, it's no longer a popularity thing, you know, like your worth, you know, your quote unquote worth in the club isn't, you know, dictated by the letters of your name. And it's like, you know, it's almost like we're arguing that everyone deserves to be learned about, even the opener.
Right.
There's something interesting about every single person on this lineup, because we personally handwrite every bio for every artist playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no ranking, you know, it is what it is. We write what we write.
Yeah.
Everyone has almost equally as long of a paragraph. And we try to keep it simple. So, you know, I think why a lot of people are excited about what we do is because we've pretty much like flattened, you know, what used to be a very unequal billing system. And I think for established artists, you know, no difference to them. You know, they've got what they've got. They've got national tours regardless of our party. And then, but for the smaller artists, we've now brought them up a little to be a little bit more level with the bigger guys.
It's always a big deal. You know, like I've had some of my friends come through and play, and it's always a big deal to play at your party. Cause like, it means that like, you're kind of, because you have this flat equal billing system and like you kind of treat all the artists the same way, you're kind of bringing these artists who are, you know, maybe unknown into this echelon of,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right. It sort of is a rite of passage for a lot of people.
Especially in like the LA bass scene, like the bass music scene in LA, like playing Space Yacht is like, oh, you're doing really well. Like you're doing great. You're like, you're serious business now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do sense that from like sort of the comments I've seen online. And you know, we do hold artists accountable. Like, you know, I think on social media, there's like this, like, you know, artists are holy and like, you must not kind of, you know, like art is everything, but also like, you know, I'm going to give their managers some credit, you know, like these business people work a thankless job and obviously their jobs are to think about the money and also protect the money.
Yeah.
You know, why I mentioned that is like, there's a lot of these people who promote and like bring the fact up to me that like, oh, my artist is doing so-and-so now. And oftentimes I'll say like, you know, let's hold out, you know, and not because I don't like the person. It's just like, let's hold out and like, let's see that the artist is growing and committed to their career. And maybe, you know, you'll get a better kind of set time or position than you would have if you did it right now.
Right.
So let's like wait out 6 months and see where we're at. And oftentimes like managers or the artists themselves are like, okay, cool. I get what you're saying. And you know, we make a good show out of it. So, you know, it's also a little part thing on my end to hold these people accountable. It's like, are you actually creating better art over time? And like, does it sound cooler or does it sound more interesting in six months? And I do challenge these artists to do certain things. It's like, it's not like a homey thing at all.
Yeah. Well, you have like a response. I think when you have a, you know, sort of this cultural curation event, so, like, I mean, you guys are like this kind of center of this culture in LA. And I think, you know, you kind of have a responsibility to maintain like that position and make sure that you're using it in the best way for the scene or for the culture.
Right.
And it really seems like you guys are doing that.
And you know, dude, there's no like rule
to
doing this. Like some people just love putting on their homies. Totally fine.
Yeah, definitely.
There are parties out there that are just strictly about that.
Yeah.
And probably most parties. And you know what? I would too. But it's our way of saying to our fans that, hey, look, we are actually committed to like establishing this as a music first thing because it is about the music and there are parties where it's not about the music. So what? I don't care. It's fine. But you know, that's just the way we do it. And it's not the only way people should do things. It, you know, you should do things in different ways.
Yeah.
But it's our way.
It's a great way. Definitely. So if you had anything to tell yourself before Space Yacht started, like before, maybe even like before you booked your first show with like Ollie's birthday downtown.
Yeah.
If you had anything to tell yourself back then, what would it be?
Wow. I don't know. I don't know. My first instinct says don't be an idiot, but like, if I told myself that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, it wouldn't mean anything to me.
Right.
I wouldn't know what being an idiot was because I was an idiot.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I think I could have been more aggressive.
Okay.
In that, you know, what that means is like, I could have probably, the risks that I was afraid to take because I was so inexperienced, what I replaced that with was just more due diligence. I just remember like, oh, I feel like I should do more research. And, you know, it's easy to say looking back and just like, you know, yeah, just do it. You know, because you don't worry about it. You'll know in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Future me will, I got you covered. You know, it's not like that. you know, when you're in that moment of like, okay, this is just the inexperience that is, you need to recognize your mortality and your shortcomings. And if you need to supplement that with due diligence and like asking people, that's fine. But, you know, I think there were, if I saw my past self today, I'd be like, yo, this is future Henry. You know, you need to talk to these lawyers, you need to talk to these, you know, business people, and they will give you the answers that will open your eyes. I would tell that person that. So, you know, I would say go out and meet more people who have more resources than you do and learn to create this framework where you can not only, I don't want to say blindly trust them, but like learn to have a framework where you can like judge the words and the advice that certain people give you and then act on it. You know, those were things I didn't do enough. And it was just like, there's a certain way to do research,
right,
that make it really fruitful. And I do it now, but I don't, you know, and there's probably better ways for me to do it even in the future. But, you know, if anyone's starting out, please, you know, go talk to as many people as you can, listen to podcasts like these, because you get perspectives that you've never seen before. And just allow that to influence your decision making,
right,
or, you know, allow that to, you know, potentially help
like
you grow.
Maybe don't be so ruled by anxiety and like fear. Cause I feel like what you're describing is like, you know, doing all your due diligence and like being very careful is like, you're being careful about because you're scared of reaching out maybe, or you're scared of like,
yeah. I mean, when you bring up anxiety, it's like, you can just, you know, you can remove anxiety or you can remove the thing that causes your anxiety. That's like distinctly two different things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as anyone starting out, like even a business person or even like a person who's just trying to be a better person, like if you have a challenge in your life or if you have a problem to solve and you can just put a patch over it, or you can, you know, like find out what this problem stems from and create this framework or like a checklist of things you can do to reach your goals. So for me, it was like, getting my contacts down and getting my things down in writing for myself and just for myself. So I can sort of look at the steps that I could take to solve my problems faster. So for one specific thing, I was like, yeah, get more expertise from older guys.
So what is your personal goal, say in the next 5 years for Henry?
That's an interesting question, because like I don't provide enough backstory info on it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, Space Yacht is an incredible, like, what's the word, priority?
Yeah, of course.
For me personally, and you know, as someone who now is like, oftentimes many people who come to LA to tour as an artist, it's like I'm oftentimes one of the first people they call. You know, I'd love to create more like places for these people to prosper and opportunities. And even before Space Yacht, like if you wanted to, if you asked me that question, it was like, I want to create jobs for people, like, you know, and it wasn't just music related. It was just like, you know, whatever I do, I want to have a team and I want to have people to like be able to eat, you know, it's like really that simple.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when, and now that we're relating this to like Space Yacht, which is what I'm doing right now, you know, I just want to create like spaces, and I'm a creative person myself. And it's just like, you know, I just don't happen to do music. I do shows and I do like these experiences where people come in and escape. And I want to create more of these things.
Could you see yourself branching out into other genres?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, dude, I might not even do Space Yacht forever, you know, like some people go into something expecting that they'll do it for the rest of their lives, but it's like, dude, I'll change, you know, I might like, you know, just my tastes might change and I might just want to do something else. That's totally fine. Like, I don't care, you know, that's just how it is. But, you know, maybe we'll start a country music party and I might, you know, before that I might, you know, fall in love with country music.
The biggest underground, and that's just like country music party one example. In Los Angeles.
I know. Right. Do you actually about that?
Not a lot of talk about it yet.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm going to be inspired by different things that touch people, you know, and I'm almost certain it won't only always be music.
Right.
And maybe in 2 or 3 years, I might want to do something in addition to Space Yacht,
right.
You know, like I'm now learning like these kind of like ways to build businesses and not like have to envelop yourself in the day to day. So as I'm growing older, it's like, wow, maybe I could do like 3 different things or 4 different things, 5 different things. And you know, certainly right now, like super top priority is Space Yacht,
right.
You know, but maybe like one of my other things will like, I'll be, oh my God, you know, there's a whole pocket of people that is dying to, you know, get something fresh. And I might just kind of like want to dive into that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where do you see Space Yacht going in 5 years then?
Damn, I've been thinking about like 3 years, but let's challenge ourselves now on the spot. To go
I was
going to
say
years.
20, but I racked yeah. it down a little bit.
Yeah. You know, we're already doing certain things to kind of like, bring on the next evolution of Space Yacht. And, you know, that boils down to what we want to do for the music community, or like the dance music community. And it's like, how do you present something fresh and how do you push this culture forward? Because it's a very rich history where this we came from, you know, like even before our time, the warehouses, the undergrounds and all that, the raves and all that, like we're barely experiencing our version of it. And I'm like, with all due respect, you know, yeah, well, we have nothing but respect for the people who've come through before us, but we're going to do everything in our, like, in our energy to like sort of forward the culture from our point onward.
Right.
And
cause it's in your hands basically.
Sure. Like a little part, like a little percentage of it. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, our things is like, how do we embrace today's technology and tomorrow's technology more to do what we do better? You know, that, and that comes down to like, we might start a record label so that people can discover more music in ways, more ways than just shows. You know, I think there's an argument to say that's something that helps artists and it also helps people who want to find artists.
Yeah.
The other thing is like, we might want to take our parties to different cities because there's a lot of, you know, cities that don't get this kind of music, and often, so we might change that. And there's, you know, we want to throw bigger shows, more interesting shows. You know, what about a show in Igloo? What about a show in space?
Yeah.
On a yacht.
The actual, I guess that's where it ends is
that's
is actually, on the space yacht.
That is actually where it begins.
Okay.
That's actually where it begins. So, so we're going to give it some time until we're, our space technology
is there.
Is there.
You're going to bring on Elon.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, but to give you a real answer, it's like, we want to create these, like the next path of like live music entertainment, in the club setting, or we want to do what we do well, but grow on that.
Right.
And so that comes out to like, you know, the touring parties, the online crazy weird stuff, the memes, you know, everything will be stronger over time until we're over it. I think there's one day we're going to be over it and
you'll know.
It'll become an underground country show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It'll be great. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good one. Let me see. So, okay. Here's a good one. So you guys, I mean, I know I've kind of said like you guys have the culture in your hands, and I know you guys, you know, I've said that like you guys are kind of this like centerpiece of bass music culture in LA, and I really think this is true. Like I know you're very hands off about that, about saying that, you know what I mean? But you guys really do have like, you are a tastemaker and you are a culture curator, and kind of, I guess for somebody that wants to do what you guys do, say if, you know, in Austin, Texas, or say in Seattle or something like that, where somebody, there's a piece of culture that is missing that they see that they want to create. What advice would you say to them? Like, what kind of advice would you say to somebody that wants to be, cause you're not really, you know, like you're not quite really a promoter in the traditional sense of being a promoter. You're not necessarily like, I don't know, like an internet personality in the traditional sense of being an internet personality. Like you're not a record company guy in the traditional sense of being a record company guy.
Yeah.
So like, how would you say like, cause it, I mean, I really think it's like, you know, you're kind of a
I don't want to call you like a new media rock star or something like that, but you're like, you're existing in, you know, the internet age now, and you're doing something that there's, you know, there's similar things to what people are doing 10 or 20 years ago, but it's really its own thing. So I guess, how does one break into that? You know what I mean? Like, how do you
into being,
I like say if somebody wants to have your job, not your job at Space Yacht, but like wants to do what you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like say if he's this, you know, 17-year-old kid that's listening to this podcast right now, like and sees Space Yacht as a thing, and they say like, well, I want to do something like that. That's a big question to ask. You know what I mean?
It's not that you paint this like awesome picture.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's every generation has this challenge. Like you are given this technology and that's all you have, because that's just what is available at the time of your generation. And you have to make the most of it. You know, if you wanted to do what I was doing, I'm not actually doing something that is impossible to do. I'm just embracing the technology that I'm given to the maximum capacity and being creative with it. And the reason why it's like it seems kind of hard is because, you know, technology changes faster today than it did 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. You know, let's say like, you know, however many years ago, a cell phone was completely revolutionary. You know, today the cell phone, you know, is already here and you're just getting like these incremental changes, but then somewhere down the line, something else is going to pop up, or like an app will pop up
that
completely changes the way you do things. You know, recognize that things change and your resources change or get better or get worse or whatever it is, but like, you know, make the best of it and find ways to reach people with what you do. I would say actually an incredible thing, incredibly important thing for people starting out is be honest to yourself, because your values are, it's easy to protect and to act upon your personal values when they are reflective of who you are. You know, if you want to act on values of someone else or like your boss or something, it's now like you have to reinterpret or redo things, and like there's an added layer. So if you have the benefit of being in a position where you can run your own business, which granted a lot of people don't have, be honest to your values. It's incredibly, incredibly important, because it also bleeds into your personal kind of life and your satisfaction. And like, you know, if you have a goal to help someone in the world, like that can be applied to your business. Blah, blah, blah. There's many examples of this, but it's like, if you're true to yourself and your values, I think you'll have an incredibly great time. And it'll be easier for you to do what you do.
Cause you're not trying to do something. It's just,
that isn't
being
you.
Yeah. You're just being, right.
You're
you.
Just being,
yeah.
And that's it. And a lot, you know, that's kind of it. And once you have that kind of locked in, and then once you layer on like business savvy and you layer on your contacts, which those things just grow over time as you do it. It's just the way it happens. Like that goes. Once that's all mapped to your own personal values and it's like actually honest to who you are, you know, it's going to be easier and easier and easier, easier for you to do what you do.
Right.
As long as like you believe it yourself and it's true to yourself.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good note, I think, to end on, because we're hitting about an hour at this point.
Sure.
That's a pretty good nugget, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for sitting down with me, man. This was great.
Well, thank you, Roman.
Yeah. Definitely got into some really cool stuff.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. And where can we find you, I guess, is the question I'm going to ask. Next.
I am LA based.
Okay.
I have my parties every Tuesday. I'm very online. My party is very online. But if you are in LA, you know, anyone who's listening is welcome to reach out to me. My DMs are open.
What's your handle?
My handle is at Hidden Hen. So like a hiding Henry. It's like a hidden hen.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also on at Space Yacht.
Cool.
That's our party.
And all the information can be found through there.
Yeah, we're pretty transparent.
Cool. So that's our show.
For those of you that don't know, we host a monthly talk here in Los Angeles. If you want to keep up with all the Industry Talks news and find out when and where our next panel is taking place, check us out online at industrytalks.net. Thanks for listening.